couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the DC League of Super Pets, Vengeance, Not Okay, and Paper Girls. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Species on 4K. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I get comments all the time, and I have for 20 years, about my reviews, whether people like them or they don't. I've had a whole variety of people coming out of the woodwork and giving me feedback in such a way. That's the beautiful thing about the internet. That's also the horrifying thing about the internet at the same time. Well, there was this one comment that came out this week. Somebody took issue with my review of Nope. And they complained that it was the worst review they had ever read. And that had me chuckle because I don't write reviews anymore. I used to, you know, 20 years ago, I started writing reviews and actually started writing it for a really small publication and actually was my own editor. So I thought it was really hilarious when I would get letters to the editor telling me they should fire the movie critic, which was me. People assume a lot when they see you in a position of authority or so. And the reason this person said red is I know exactly what this person did. They went to Rotten Tomatoes. And I gave it a negative review and I gave it a negative score. I'm linked on Rotten Tomatoes. But if you're going to tell somebody who puts audio reviews on the internet and you can listen to my review, but I don't have it written down anywhere. So if you're saying you read this review, you just read a pull quote. So you are showing your blithering ignorance. If it's the worst review, fine. If it's a bad review, tell me. But do the due diligence of actually listening to the review and recognizing that I didn't write one, that I just wrote a one-sentence pull quote that quotes me from what I actually say in the review. That's one of the big problems in this feedback machine that we have where everybody can comment and reach out to you is people don't actually, they read a headline and then they comment based on the headline. And that becomes a real problem when the headlines are all clickbait. Anyways, when it comes to Nope, Nope did okay at the box office. It did $44 million, which is good. I mean, it certainly is good, and it's the third number one grossing movie of the week that Jordan Peele has directed. So it did well, but it didn't do as well as they expected. And we're in that weird territory of was the movie successful or not? Because I was seeing predictions upwards of $55 million or more, but he didn't do that. But that's okay. $44 million for essentially a sci-fi horror Twilight Zone type movie ain't bad. So you got to take that with a grain of salt. I don't think it's going to have as much of a click as Jordan Peele's last two movies, but it also wasn't hitting it out of the park in terms of box office. And can we stop comparing him to whatever director of the day you want? Don't compare him to Spielberg. Don't compare him to Shyamalan. He's his own director. He has a very different career path. He has a very different way he got into entertainment than any of these people. So let's let Jordan Peele make his movies and not declare him over or done or whatever. You know, at some point he's going to make just some goofy little rom-com and it's going to tick off everybody who like the horror stuff. Also, last weekend was Comic-Con, and there's a couple announcements that are worth mentioning that came out of them. First of all, Star Trek, there's two things that I really want to point out because I'm a big Star Trek fan. Star Trek Picard is going to have its third and final season, and it is leaning heavily on the folks from the Next Generation. You've got Gates McFadden as Beverly Crusher. You've got Geordi LaForge coming back, played by LeVar Burton. And yeah, I mean, you had Reichert and Troy come back as well, but it's nice to have these familiar faces. It's leaning into its legacy characters. Also with the Star Trek news, Lower Decks, the animated series, is going to have a crossover with Strange New Worlds, which I think is amazing. I'm looking forward to this. I don't know how it's going to work, but I am looking forward to it. I will never apologize for there being too much Star Trek out there to watch. I love Star Trek. I grew up on Star Trek and Star Wars and comic books and all that other stuff. But I will never complain that there's too many Star Trek shows to watch because I was going through a desert when I was a kid. You had the old original series, and you couldn't find the animated series anywhere until it finally made its way to streaming. And aside from that, you just had to wait every so many years for a movie until they decided to do the next generation. I mean, it was tough. In terms of the Marvel news, there's a whole launching of all their new stuff into the next phase. I mean, you've got Quantumania and Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Black Panther 2, Blade, Fantastic Four. And then there's going to be two new Avengers movies, The Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. So we've got all that coming at us. Plus a bunch of TV shows. You got Echo, which is a spinoff of Hawkeye, Season 2 of Loki, Agatha, Coven of Chaos, you know, a spinoff of WandaVision. And then Daredevil, they're bringing back Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio to be in the Daredevil TV series, which I never watched because I just didn't have time to. Again, not complaining that there's too much Marvel stuff, but I didn't watch their TV shows. I didn't think their TV shows were that good until they got to Disney Plus and they started to actually put together TV shows that were worth watching and were at least shorter runs, although Daredevil Born Again is going to be something like 18 episodes. So it's going to be a longer form than something like Loki or, you know, like what, the 6 episodes or so we had of Ms. Marvel. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm just going to blast through these 3 trailers because these all came out at Comic-Con, and there are a ton of other trailers that came out at Comic-Con. But I want to point out these because they're the superhero movies that are coming up. The first one I want to talk about is Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, which is in theaters on November 11th.
I am queen of the most powerful nation in the world, and my entire family is gone. Have I not given everything?
This is getting a lot of buzz, partly because some people are upset that they didn't recast T'Challa and that they kept Chadwick Boseman as the role and that, you know, they're passing the mantle on to somebody else. But I mean, that makes sense. You don't have to recast it because Black Panther was always handed down to somebody. It was like Zorro. It was handed down to the next person. So I'm okay with that. And I always thought Letitia Wright was just going to walk right into that role anyway. So this one actually looks like it's bigger and more science fiction-y than the first Black Panther, whereas that one was a little bit more of like a James Bond type story. But yeah, this one looks really good. It's going to be a hit. The next one I want to talk about is Black Adam, which opens on October 21st.
My powers are not a gift, but a curse.
You believe you are not worthy,
but you have 2 paths. You can be the destroyer of this world, or you can be its savior.
This is Dwayne Johnson playing the character of Black Adam, which has had a shady history in the past. I mean, going back to the Fawcett comics, when C.C. Beck wrote the original Captain Marvel, which is what the comics were called back then, Black Adam was a bad guy, and he would fight Captain Marvel very, very early, all the way back into the 40s. And they've developed him over the years, and I know that Dwayne Johnson has been wanting to play this role for a while. So this one looks like it's going to be interesting. It looks like they're trying to enrich this DC universe and get away from the depressing dark mess that Zack Snyder was putting together. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Shazam! Fury of the Gods, which opens in theaters on December 21st.
Listen to me, Billy. The fate of your world depends on it. The daughters of Atlas are coming for you.
Children stole the power of all the gods.
Shazam!
This is very personal, Billy.
Look, I might not have as much experience as you because I'm not super old like you, but I've seen all of the Fast and the Furious movies, lady. It's all about
family! Shazam!
I loved the first Shazam. I mean, it's goofy and silly, but that's okay because it was such a welcome change from that heavy, dark, depressing element that Zack Snyder brought, and that stuff works for a Batman movie, but it doesn't quite work for a Shazam movie. And I love the fact that they're bringing back the Shazam family. I mean, I'm looking forward to this one, and I'm curious to see how this is going to play out with the Black Adam movie, because they're coming out, you know, just 2 months apart. Coming up on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Vengeance and Paper Girls. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and start off with a vengeance, or just vengeance, I guess. BJ Novak directs and stars in this mystery about a man who travels to West Texas to investigate the murder of an ex-lover.
I'm in West Texas, where this family just lost their daughter to an opiate overdose.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
It's okay, it's not someone I was close to.
But you flew to Texas for it?
Yes, it was a girl I hooked up with a few times. Her family thought that we were more serious than I did.
Evelyn just didn't die, she was murdered.
What?
And the two of us, we won't avenge her death.
What evidence does he have that it was a murder?
Nothing. And that's the story.
If you don't know who BJ Novak is, there's a lot of people who actually aren't familiar with him. He was instrumental to the series The Office. I mean, he didn't create it. That's, you know, Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais. And he didn't create the American version. That was Greg Daniels. But he was an executive producer and story editor on the show for years since its inception. And he just kind of put himself in there. He has a very small part in The Office, but he was big behind the scenes. And he's finally getting a chance to direct his own movie and kind of get a good big release on this one. And it's kind of weird because I think he probably wrote this script when he was younger, because he's like in his early 40s now, and this feels like the character should be in his late 20s or early 30s, because the story is kind of all over the place, because it's multiple movies in one. There's multiple genres it's juggling. On one hand, it's like this coming-of-age story, and then it's this thriller, and then it's this series of discovery, and it's kind of a drama, but a lighthearted comedy at times. It bounces around, and it makes it kind of uneven. But the whole story follows this guy he's a bit of a player in New York, and he's a writer, and he's worked on The New Yorker, and he's just one of those guys who just likes to just play the field. And I don't know, I mean, I'm 50, and I've been married for a couple decades, and I got 3 kids. So I don't have a whole lot of patience or respect for people who are just like, oh, I don't want to settle down when I'm in my 40s. Like, when are you going to settle down? When you got prostate cancer? So, I mean, the idea of these people who just want to go around and have sex their whole life, I mean, that's fine if you want to do that, but I think you need to be upfront in a relationship. But they make it very clear at the beginning of this that he's one of these guys who just goes from girl to girl to girl and has them listed in his little black book, which is really his phone. And what happens is he gets a call out of the blue from the brother of one of the women he had hung out with and had sex with occasionally, saying that she had died. And they thought, and the family thought, he was her longtime boyfriend. When he really hadn't. He hadn't spoken to her in a while. But still, out of respect, he goes out to West Texas in the middle of nowhere to go to this woman's funeral. And then when he's out there, he discovers that it could have been a murder, that it was under suspicious circumstances. So he's able to get somebody to say, we'll do a murder podcast about this. And this is something that bothers. I'm not involved in that level of podcasting. I mean, really, the Fat Guys at the Movie show, it's on the radio. It's a radio show, and there's a podcast archive of it. But I don't consider myself a podcaster. I'm not making another version of My Favorite Murder. But I don't know. It just seems a little bit bizarre that I don't know if they run podcasts and just let somebody go without any sort of fact checking or, you know, I mean, there's journalistic stuff that's sort of disappearing in the discussion of this. And it just doesn't seem to pass the smell test on how this actually works and how people get podcasting jobs and how much they pay. You know, this, it feels like they just hand out podcasts to anybody who's got a writing resume. And I know that's definitely not true. I don't live in New York and I'm not in those circles, but I don't know. This thing does not seem to be realistically designed. It's just sort of this excuse to get the story going. But while he's out there, you know, of course, it's the clash of the cultures where, you know, he's a New Yorker and he's a little bit more trendy and they're sort of the salt of the earth people and their favorite restaurant is Whataburger. But it starts off very dismissive of people in flyover country. And this area of West Texas that they live in, it's the flyover country of the flyover country. And I've driven through West Texas, and there's a lot of it. And you know, it's very small communities. We're on in West Texas. You know, hey, guys down there in West Texas. So, I mean, there's some really good people and some wonderful folks and some neat little towns, but it's not exactly New York City. And so he does kind of approach it as they're a bunch of hayseeds or rednecks. But then there's this development where he opens his eyes and he realizes that these are just people with different culture and they're not New Yorkers or whatever. But even then, it just kind of flops around and it still manages to sort of poke fun at that. while trying to be understanding of it at the same time. But as this is all going on, you got this murder investigation that he's privately investigating, and they kind of forget about it for a while. That just kind of takes a backseat to him learning how people live out there and how everybody's different, and it's okay if you got a gun rack in your pickup truck, that kind of stuff. So it just seems such a schizophrenic movie. It's kind of just pops all over the place, and then finally, like, oh yeah, we have a murder investigation. We got to talk to. We got this woman that died, and somebody might be responsible for her death, and it gives a conclusion that feels almost like an afterthought. The premise of this guy going out to West Texas from New York anyways just for this funeral, and then being able to do an entire podcast on it with nobody doing any sort of fact checking. So I don't know, it just didn't feel authentic. Look, while there's a decent setup, this movie just gets distracted from itself, and it prattles on with this misplaced self-discovery and cliched messaging. So I'm going to have to say that Vengeance kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Paper Girls. This is on Prime Video. Four girls with paper routes in 1988 find themselves propelled into the future and have to try to set the past right.
Why does the sky look like that?
Move, move, move! Let's get out of here! Hey! Who's there?
What are you doing in my house?
What are you doing in my house?
I live here.
No, I live here.
That's her.
This is a psychotic break. 12-year-old version of yourself broke into your house with her punk friends?
If that really is future you, maybe she can call someone.
Who's she gonna call?
I knew nothing about the series going into it. It plays a little bit off of the Amblin architecture of the 80s. We got a bunch of kids running around on bikes having a grand adventure. Only this one, they're girls. They're not boys. You know, the Goonies were mostly boys. Even Stranger Things, mostly boys. But this one's told from the girl perspective, and it has some interesting time travel stuff, but it's not this flashy, over-the-top, or cartoony kind of time travel. I mean, like, Back to the Future is a cartoony kind of time travel. This is a little more pragmatic, and there's this threat from the future, and these girls are stuck into it. And then, of course, when they show up in 2019, they're running into their older selves, and they got to figure out exactly what's going on. And it's an interesting idea. It really is a neat premise, and they do some neat characterization. The girls, the characterization between the girls and their relationships with each other, that's the most interesting part. The time travel stuff and the sci-fi element of it works to kind of have that platform of an interesting story, but that's not the most interesting stuff. That's almost kind of played off as mundane. And in fact, some of the stuff from the futuristic times seems almost a little silly. I mean, they got a good antagonist, but it's more interesting to see these girls reacting to what their world is like in 30 years, even if it's not played for jokes the way like Back to the Future or Back to the Future Part 2 is. So yeah, I enjoyed Paper Girls. I'm only a couple episodes in. I wasn't able to finish the whole series, but so far it really seems like it's got an interesting catch to it, especially being a little bit different than stuff. You know, I mean, it's an intriguing take on that 80s Amblin adventure from the female perspective. So I'm going to have to say Paper Girls kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we have the DC League of Super Pets and Not Okay. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the DC League of Super Pets. Superman's dog Krypto teams up with a group of misfit rescue pets to stop an evil force from taking over the world.
We'll go for a walk.
I have an owner, and he's Superman.
My dog's the best, but he's not the greatest with other animals.
What is new with you, fellow normal dog?
Well, well, well. If it isn't the Justice League.
You're super strong.
I should be a lot more dead right now, right?
My best friend is in danger, and you have to help me.
Well, we're just a bunch of shelter pets. But they're stronger than you think.
Now, there's a lot of people out there that kind of turn their nose up at Krypto and the idea of Krypto, because it's silly. Superman has a dog, yeah, really. And somehow that dog managed to get to Earth and also has superpowers. But, I mean, Krypto's been around for decades. He's been around for almost as long as Superman has. Certainly as long as Superboy has been around. So Krypto absolutely has a background, and they've done cartoons with him before. So this is not inserting Scrappy-Doo into the Superman universe. This is meant to be a fun sort of offshoot of it. It's not meant to coincide necessarily with the upcoming Shazam movies or with the upcoming Aquaman sequel. It has nothing to do with the Snyderverse. In fact, the other thing that I find really neat about it is they go back, and you heard that in the trailer, they go back and they play the original John Williams Superman theme, which that's the best Superman theme out there. It's so iconic, and it transcends generations. You can play that theme now, and it still sounds great. It's like the Star Wars theme. It's John Williams, for crying out loud. But in this one, it's very funny. It's very cute. You know, of course, you've got the voices of Dwayne Johnson as Krypto and Kevin Hart as Ace. And they've also worked together before. I mean, Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson have done a couple movies together, so they have a good chemistry. I don't know if they did any of the recording together, but it certainly fits. And it's a neat little movie and a good excuse for getting the pets involved. And it gives a framework as to why the pets are trying to save the day rather than the actual superheroes. And it dips into other elements of DC lore. You know, they got a new Green Lantern, which has been in the comics for, what, about 10 years. It certainly has an awareness of the comic books, and I appreciate that. The animation side of any superhero franchise is better and more honest to the canon of the comics than the live-action movies ever are, because usually with the live-action movies, you get somebody going and saying, I want to do my own thing. I want to do my spin. I want to give it my own unique version. So anyways, the DC League of Super Pets is a lot of fun. It's got some great jokes in it. It's got sight gags. I mean, it's a cartoon and it's made for kids. So is it a serious superhero movie? No, because it's about a talking dog. You know, with its heart and its soul tied to that history of DC Comics. This spirited movie is great family fun. It's really cute. I was surprised at how much I liked it. And it's one of those movies I wish my kids were younger. My youngest is 14. And my oldest is 21. He's too busy buying alcohol for it. So. But I mean, I remember when my kids were like, you know, 4, 6, and 10 kind of thing. That's when you would want to take them to this movie. This would have been a great movie for the kids. I just don't have kids that age. And I felt bad. I was just like, this would have been great to see with my kids. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So I'm going to have to say DC League of Super Pets totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Not Okay. Zoe Deutsch stars as a wannabe influencer who exploits a misunderstanding that she was present during a terrorist attack in Paris.
Hey, Mom! I got invited to a writer's retreat in Paris. Yes, really.
We are here with the girl of the moment. You've been blowing up our Insta feed. Speaking of bombings.
Really glad you're not dead.
Me too. Ha.
Isn't she so strong, everybody? Oh my God, you're the girl from the Paris attacks.
Let's not forget the signature red beret.
If you're not okay, that's okay.
Okay, the weirdest thing about this movie, and I don't know if this is going to be actually in the release of it, because it's on Hulu. I got an early screener of it, but I can't imagine it not being in the release. There's a disclaimer. It's not uncommon for Hulu, anything under the Disney umbrella, which Hulu is, it's not uncommon to see a disclaimer that has trigger warnings. You know, if there's bright flashy lights, you know, if you're epileptic, you don't really want to watch it because it can induce a seizure. Or if, like in Obi-Wan Kenobi, they flash back to the Order 66 scene where Darth Vader goes in and kills all the younglings. And it happened right after the Robb Elementary School shooting, and they put a trigger warning saying, hey, this is has some stuff that might be disturbing. And I know there's people going, why do we need trigger warnings for this? What's wrong with a trigger warning? What is wrong with telling people saying, hey, if you've suffered a trauma, this is going to be represented here? What's wrong with putting in a warning? I never understand why people get upset when there's a warning. It's not a warning nobody should watch it. It's just letting people know. You know, it's like back in the day when you'd watch HBO or Cinemax and they'd put, this movie contains all these things in it. Don't just let your kid watch the movie that has a graphic sexual assault scene in it or something like that. So in this movie, which is, it's also R-rated. It's got swearing, it's got sex, I think it's got a little bit of nudity in there. So the movie has a warning at the beginning, and it says it has smoking and this and that, and an unlikable female protagonist. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. I have never seen a trigger warning that warns you you're not going to like the main character. I mean, there's plenty of unlikable main characters in movies and TV and literature going back to the beginning of time. But I've never seen a warning about that specifically. And it's absolutely right. She is not a likable character. The character that Zoe Deutsch plays is Dani Summers, I think is her name. And she's awful. But the whole thing is that what she does is she lies about going to Paris, and then she makes these Instagram photos that she photoshops herself in and pretends she's there and just gets the day off of work. And then there's this Paris bombing in the movie, and they think she was there because she happened to take a picture of herself by a landmark minutes before the bombing happened. And then she just sort of plays off this misunderstanding to get fame, and she starts getting a job as a writer for this online something. I guess it's like a BuzzFeed. It's called Depravity. I don't know if it's even a real website. But again, it's the same problem I had with Vengeance. I'm like, is this really how it works? I've worked in internet publishing. And I mean, this is sort of like a millennial version of what an old journalism story would have been back, you know, 30 years ago, where a person worked on a paper or they worked on a TV news program. And she is unlikable. I know they understand that, but she's so unlikable that even when she turns the corner on things, you still can't stand her. And on top of it, everybody else just sort of lets this happen. Nobody fact checks anything. Nobody does any sort of due diligence. Look, even the people who would be inclined to dislike her. Because look, nobody is immediately loved as a person. You're going to have the worst thing happen to you, and if you speak out against it, there's going to be somebody out there trying to dox you before you become unpopular. And even when the movie's trying to make this point of it's not all about you, it's still all about her. Even her stepping away at times and letting others take the spotlight is a decision by her. Everything is told from her narcissistic perspective, and I don't think she gains anything. The character doesn't gain anything. It's okay to have an unlikable protagonist, but if the unlikable protagonist never really actually changes or grows, unless that's the absolute reason for it, and I don't think that's what the point of the movie is. The point is some growth in this character, but the character I don't think really grows. It's like the person who gets caught in this huge scandal, and then they're, Paul, I'm so sorry. I can't believe this happened. It's like, because you're sorry, you got caught. I mean, this has the same lovable relationship with right and wrong that Dear Evan Hansen did. So, you know, even this movie can't decide if it likes its own characters. And it struggles to escape its own egocentrism about an anti-egocentric message. Can we stop having movies that define yourself and your worth and your value by likes on Instagram? That's the worst message you can give to your own generation. Maybe it's because I'm Gen X and I'm 50 years old and I have no interest in starting a TikTok account. Anyways, I did not like this movie. I thought it was misdirected at best. I'm going to have to say that Not Okay is not okay. It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
And that's it for the new movie reviews. Next, we're going to be talking about the Riff Tracks catalog. And I'm going to be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Species in 4K. Because we can't go! And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. And I want to talk about Riff Tracks. I've talked about Riff Tracks before in the show. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I talked about the Riff Tracks of the Star Wars prequels. And if you don't know the background of Riff Tracks, it goes all the way back to Mystery Science Theater 3000. That show started in 88, 89. I didn't first discover it until about 1990 or so when I was in college. And I fell in love with it immediately. The premise for Mystery Science Theater was created by this guy named Joel Hodgson's in Minnesota. And the story was about this janitor at this tech company that these evil scientists knock him out, put him on a rocket ship, put him in a space satellite, and then show him terrible movies to see what the reaction is to his brain. And the only way he can survive is by creating a bunch of robots to go into the theater with him, and then they make fun of the movies. became a huge cult phenomenon. I was a huge fan of it, loved it. It ran for, well, 10 seasons. It flopped around from a couple networks, and they changed cast a couple times. Well, eventually, Joel was replaced by a guy named Mike Nelson, and then when the show folded, Mike Nelson, several years later, got together with Kevin Murphy, who was on the original show, and Bill Corbett, who had come in to replace another actor on the show, and the three of them started to produce these commentary tracks, which they called riff tracks. And it started out as just them putting these MP3s online, and you could pay for them and download. They were like a couple bucks each, and you could play them during a movie. Now, over the years, they've gotten more sophisticated, and they actually have an app now that will play the commentary and listen to the movie and sync it up automatically. But that's a great way to watch the commentaries of the big movies. And the thing that made Riff Tracks innovative over Mystery Science Theater is they didn't have to get the rights to the movies. They could just produce the audio track, and it was up to you to just play it along with your DVD. Then they also started to go the MST3K route, where they found old cheap movies they could get for a steal, and then they just embedded their commentary in. Now, the thing is, these old cheap movies, they're stuff like drive-in films and stuff like that. They're B-movies, they're old films. So that's the basics of what Riff Tracks is. And, well, you know, they actually have a little song that goes along with it. It's kind of like the Brady Bunch. It explains it for you. Mike Nelson, Kevin Murphy, and Bill Corbett from MST3K provide hilarious commentary on all types of film, from major blockbusters to forgotten drive-in movies.
It's time for Riff Tracks. And it's not an easy job. They watch movies and they make up jokes about them. They tell their jokes to microphones. Put the jokes into a file on a secret server deep beneath a mountain, protected by a dragon. We're gonna get to rip those tracks.
I don't ever pick tracks where the rip song is in.
Why you always gotta pick rip tracks?
Only rip tracks picks on the tracks worth ripping.
One thing that I am a big fan of is cinematic comfort food. It's a comfort thing. You know, it's, you know what's going to happen. You maybe don't have to pay 100% attention to it, but you feel comfortable. You feel like, you know, it's like another friend in the room. It gives you something that you enjoy. You know, you're not watching something that's putting you on edge all the time. And when I'm burned out at the end of the week and I'm looking for something to watch, usually I go to the Riff Tracks catalog. And what's wonderful about Riff Tracks is they've gotten big enough now that they do a lot of their built-in commentaries. And they mine some of the worst things. They mine direct-to-video movies. They mine cheap stuff from the 80s. They'll watch stuff like the Asylum films, a couple of those. They do one for Reefer Madness. And Legend Films, I think, owned like House on Haunted Hill. And they did Carnival of Souls and Little Shop of Horrors, the original one, the Roger Corman film. And those are great. Now, the best way to find these is you have a ton of options. You can go to Prime Video. There's a whole bunch that are on Prime, and they cycle through every month. So they're changing this weekend, and they're going to change every couple weeks. But you just have to search Riff Tracks Prime. Now, there's some you can buy, and you can rent for like $3. But then there's a bunch on Freevee through Amazon that are also available. You just have to deal with some embedded ads. And to me, those are my favorite types, those older, crappier movies. Like, they got this movie called Guy from Harlem, who's this private detective in Miami. Doesn't make any sense. But it's hilarious. It's from the 70s. It's kind of this really cheap, mismanaged blaxploitation movie that makes Dolomite look like Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's such a mess of a movie, but they're hilarious with their commentary. And they've gotten really good at it. Earlier on, they were actually kind of still finding their footing. But now they got some very funny stuff. Now, if you don't have Amazon or you don't want to do Prime Video, you can go to Tubi TV and just search Riff Tracks. There's a ton of Riff Tracks on Tubi TV. There's some overlap there, but Pluto TV, which is another free app you can get. I think they have a Riff Tracks channel, but they also have on-demand Riff Tracks. And then finally, Shout Factory TV has a whole bunch there. But if you want to go to rifftracks.com, they have their own platform to present this too. So there's multiple options to do this. If you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater and you want to see these, I think some of the best ones are the cheesy movies, the stuff that would have shown up on Mystery Science Theater. Yeah, it's neat to see them make fun of Star Wars, but the real classic type style is the old crappy movies that look like they were put together with bubblegum and duct tape. So even though I'm not talking about any movie in particular, I will say the Riff Tracks catalog totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Species, which came out almost 30 years ago, but it is coming out on 4K. It's available now from Shout Factory. A lab uses a message from outer space to slice DNA into a human genome. What could possibly go wrong? And unleash a biological monster onto the streets.
In January, a message from an extraterrestrial source was picked up at the Parkes Observatory in Australia. A new sequence of DNA, friendly instructions on how to combine it with ours.
This growth is amazing.
He's breaking out!
She escaped. We have a serious emergency on our hands.
I want a team to track her. Hunt her down.
You created a monster, now you want us to kill it.
I remember seeing this movie in theaters, and I really enjoyed it. I remember the big hype to this movie was H.R. Giger designed the alien. And that was the big thing, because he hadn't designed an alien for almost 20 years from when he designed it for his own art, but not for Hollywood. His last big splash was the alien from Alien. The problem is the alien from Species looks very similar to the alien from Alien. I mean, not exactly, but H.R. Giger's stuff had a certain theme that was always running through it. It was that industrial, almost metallic bone structure. And you see that in the Xenomorph Alien, but you also see that in Species. And this also falls into a line of type of movies that I love. I love people in a lab trying to do something good and just having it go horribly awry. It also had Natasha Henstridge in her prime, completely naked, which I greatly, greatly appreciated as well. And it's a fun movie. It's weird because there's some things about the movie that are really spectacular. I mean, the design of the alien's pretty cool and creepy. And the story idea is cool, too. I mean, it's been done before, and it's an iteration of the alien invasion type film. But it's a neat story. And it has a fantastic cast. I mean, you got Ben Kingsley, Alfred Molina. But, I mean, it's got some great names behind it. And it's an impressive cast. But it's also sort of like partly written. Like, it has this big group of people that they bring in to hunt down Syl, who's this alien that has escaped. And not everybody's defined. You expect it to be this dirty dozen of people or the Young Guns. You expect, you know, oh, this big group. And like, Forrest Whitaker, he's an empath, but he's worthless. He's like, he comes into a room and it's full of blood. He's like, oh, something bad happened here. Like, no kidding, Counselor Troy. Now, Alfred Molina, I still have no idea what his role in the movie was as in the team. I mean, it's this great group of people, but it's really poorly defined as to why they're there. Now, I got this on 4K, and I actually went out and got a 4K player. I hadn't had a 4K player, and I made a point to get a 4K player because I wanted to see how this looks. The biggest problem with a 4K player and a 4K TV is you got to turn off the motion streaming. And my son and I were watching it, and we had to turn it off in three daggone places. We had to turn it off one place on the player and two places on the TV to finally turn off that soap opera look. Yeah, 60 frames gives you more picture, but it makes it look terrible. And once you turn that stuff off, it looks great. You got to bump up the brightness and contrast a little bit before you do that, but it actually looks really good. And the box set comes with the Blu-ray if you don't have a 4K player, and it has a whole slew of behind-the-scenes stuff, including an alternative ending, and they've got a bunch of making-of stuff, including one from the making of Species 2, but that's so they could get Natasha Henstridge talking about it. The more interesting stuff is looking at H.R. Giger at work. That's the kind of thing that's neat. But the effects really don't hold up at all. They look really bad at some points, but that's because it was the mid-90s. So, you know, while the effects don't often hold up and the script structure isn't fully formed, this is a great slice of 90s-era sci-fi paranoia. I'm going to have to say that Species on 4K kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Bullet Train, Prey, and Luck. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.